There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1042, May 7th, 2024. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Lando and Zach. Make McLaren great again. Machismo pulls a race card. Congress roll out a Sherman to face Formula One. Dig in your trenches, Signor Domenicali. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Mr. President of Podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Lando wins after 110 starts. Has Magnussen gone rogue? House Judiciary Committee Chairman opens probe into Liberty Media rejecting Andretti's entry into Formula One. Those guys have a lot of time on their hands these days. It's amazing. And Fernando pulls out the I'm Spanish card. And why did Lewis Hamilton not get a penalty? And those two topics are related, of course. And just a reminder, this week's interview, Donington, 2015. Yes, a young whippersnapper called Lando Norris. And I must remind everybody, we do need your contributions. Keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nass, I know you've had a big weekend. You've been schmoozing with the upper class. Now you're back in the ghetto. Welcome home, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Yes, little people are accorded this opportunity in the Miami community once a year. So very, very pleased. But sir, before we start, a remembrance for two souls lost at Imola 30 years ago this past weekend. And we will have more on this later in the program. Did you enjoy the Miami Grand Prix, sir? That's the first question.
Which part of the Grand Prix, sir?
Well, the $100 tacos and the K-pop star and Patrick Mahomes. Anything and everything that is the main news, which has nothing to do with Formula One. That part.
It was hilarious. I suggest that people should help Martin Brundle maybe with flashcards so he doesn't say, oh, that's Patrick Mahomes, when it's not Patrick Mahomes. And all of us are going, Martin, Martin, Martin. So, yes, hilarious, but it was a lot of fun. La Señorita was there. It's funny, this time, and in Miami, you don't need grid girls because the audience are absolutely gorgeous. So, yes, a wonderful day in the neighborhood, and obviously the weather was great. I'm sure you're going to tell us all about it, you and your new suntan.
Oh, yes, sir. It was sunshine, very hot sunshine, I should say, on my shoulders all the way, and I'm serious about how hot it was. Very good and soothing for the motorsport soul, but same cannot be said for my AARP legs. So that was quite an issue. So what I was doing is I was going to the paddock area, spending about an hour or so, and then going back to the media center, which had wonderful air con, and then, you know, make another attempt. But that was a lot of walking. So the paddock, Mr. Rogers, as you, I'm sure you've seen, is set up inside the Hard Rock Stadium, which is a very big facility and very, very impressive. And of course, for those who don't follow American football, this is where the Miami Dolphins play. So I did a lot of walking in FLA, if not LA. But this is how it really started very well on Friday. Thanks to Miss Patty Reed, longtime assistant to Mario Andretti, I was able to sit down for a 10-minute chat with the 1978 world champion. I got a text message to meet him in front of the McLaren hospitality, and I was like 30 seconds away from there, so I texted back, "I'm right here." So I got a text back, "No, it's at the McLaren hospitality in this area." So Mario was not there, and I asked people inside. They said, "No, it must be in the hospitality in the garage." So I'm going there, and halfway through, I get a text. "He'll be at the McLaren hospitality in the paddock in 1 minute," and the next line was beautiful. "Get there now, basically, because he has another appointment, and we will not be able to reschedule." So I went back, and again, there is no Mario Andretti there. So I said, "Okay, it's not going to work now. We're running out of time." I go inside. Nobody has seen him. He's not there. But then I saw him walking outside with his assistant. So I flagged him down, and he was very nice, as he has always been. We sat down, and it was a wonderful conversation, you know. He clarified, and actually he said this a few times, that he did not approach the U.S. Congress, which, you know, I had read a lot of reports, racing reports, major news, and it all looked like that he had approached them. So he says, no, he did not. And he says he was invited by the Congress to explain his side of the story. And like he said, they have met all requirements financially, technically, and whatever was thrown at them, they have addressed. I think what we have here, Mr. Rogers, is a failure to share the pie, the billion-dollar pie. In plain simple English, I spell it as G-R-E-E-D. I asked Mario, because, you know, they're hiring a lot of people. They just set up a new facility in Silverstone, which was only a few days ago. So I asked him for a scoop on high-profile technical recruitment, and he said with a smile, "Scoop is coming." And so we'll see what happens there. It will be very nice if they get this entry approved. But on a personal note, this was the best part for me. You know, when I went to my very first Grand Prix, Monza 1982, Mario Andretti was on pole position. And every time we meet, I make some reference to that. So I asked him, you know, when Scuderia Andretti is racing at Parco Monza, will it be possible to come and have a cappuccino with Mario Andretti? And he said, absolutely, 100% sure. And so I said, okay, I have it on record now. He says, no problem, you're welcome. So I cannot wait for this moment. We will put text version of this interview on the website in the next few days. Please check it out. And then I ran into, obviously, you know, if you meet racing people who are currently employed, they only say one thing: go talk to the PR person if you ask them for an interview. So I thought maybe try another side angle, you know, ask people if I can ask a few questions. So I had a brief chat with Otmar Szafnauer. He said his gardening leaves over in September, and after that, you know, he is planning to do a "I'll be back in Formula One." Let's see what happens. Who knows? He might be with Michael Andretti's team. Not sure. Now, Pierre Gasly's mom and dad were also in the paddock, but I did not see Sainz Sr. or Lando's Pepito. Both of these gentlemen are easy to deal with. Now, I was able to get a few people to answer one question. I was asked them, "Hey, may I ask you a question?" And Jonathan Wheatley of Red Bull said, "Yes, you may ask a question." So I said, "Well, I hope you answer." So, you know, people, if you ask somebody a question and they answer and they start moving, you know, the party is coming to an end. But if they answer and they stay stationary, like Chase Carey did, and it was nice to meet him, I asked him if he was still involved in the Formula One side of things with Liberty Media. He said, no, Stefano Domenicali is the man now. And of course, my favorite question with him was, because of the success of Drive to Survive, who was the brains behind this, him or Sean Bratches? And he said, you know, we both work together, and I'm sure it takes a lot of people to put together something which is so awesome now. And Sean Bratches is the man who was brought in from ESPN for leading Liberty Media's Formula One marketing agenda. Sir, I have a question for you. Apart from the current F1 people on the telecast, which was kind of muted in the media room, did they do any interviews with racing people but not currently employed in Formula One? Just curious.
They did the usual British driver thing. Lewis, Lando, Jenson Button was there with Danica. There was nothing exciting or unusual.
Okay. Yeah, it's a Sky feed, so I understand that. I give full credit to Liberty Media and Netflix for what they have done. They have really lapped the field in this regard in the short time. Liberty Media has been steering this billion-dollar love boat. Now, your homeboy, Monsieur Bruno Famin, was kind enough also to answer a few questions. Main question was, where's the problem with the car, chassis or engine? And he said, a little bit everywhere. And I asked him about the drivers. That's when he started walking and he said, well, we will see. You know, Alpine reserve driver Mr. Jack Doohan was also in Miami. His Papito MotoGP legend Mick Doohan did not fly to Florida. Jack said to me he will be happy to do an interview, but I need to get approval from team's PR department, which in the burning heat on the paddock, I was not really interested in standing 20 minutes to talk to them. And even on top of that, I knew the answer was blowing in the wind. I think a weekend asking for a driver interview is completely not possible. You know, I'll tell you, I was surprised this lady who does PR for Ferrari, Maria, she used to be at McLaren, and I had some dealings. She arranged the interview that we did with Zach Brown at Daytona some years ago, and also I communicated with her when she was at Williams many years ago. So she was doing a round in the media center, which really surprised me. And obviously she knows most of the regulars there. So I had a brief chat with her, and I asked her, you know, if I give you like a 6-week notice, is it possible to do a 10-minute interview with the drivers one-on-one? And she said, honestly, no, I can say yes, but then I will disappoint you. She said, we normally do one-on-one for TV. And, you know, being Scuderia, it's understandable. So I said, yeah, no problem. So I asked her, how about Frederick Vasseur? And she said, Freddie may be possible, but cannot guarantee. So, you know, we'll see what we can do. I did run into Frederick Vasseur in front of the Ferrari area paddock, and I did my usual. I said, hey, can I ask you a question? He said, sure. So I said, Lewis Hamilton won GP2 in his first year with your team. Can even again with your new team in his rookie season? He laughed and laughed, and then he didn't want to say anything, which, you know, who can blame him? And among other people, sir, DC, David Coulthard, Ralf Schumacher, Romain Grosjean, Jenson Button, all there. Your favorite driver, who you already mentioned, was there. And I noticed with keen interest, your favorite driver had both shoes on. She must have received a parcel from Montreal lately. Of course, we are talking about Miss Danica Patrick. You know, I'll tell you, I was able to chat with JB. And I told him I was witness to his first pole position in Formula One at Imola 2004, and that got his attention, which always helps. And I told him, you know, I've been trying to track you down at your IMSA races. I am told to reach out to Sky to talk to you. So I said, you know, what will it take to sit down and have a chat with you? He said, you know, I'll be happy to talk, but not this weekend because, and this was already on Saturday, I believe. So I gave him my card and he said, you know, we can try it some other race. So I will try to track him down at some IMSA racing event. Apparently he's doing the full IMSA event. So maybe we go to a place like Mid-Ohio or Watkins Glen. Maybe I'll try my luck there, but I definitely would like to have a chat with JB. Now, thanks to Frank Montani, I'm sure you remember him. You know, he's now working with Canal Plus with, what's her name, Jacques Lafitte's daughter, Margot Lafitte. Okay? So I'm talking to Frank, and he says to me, let's walk into the Pirelli area, because it was very hot. And we go there, and he had to get out. Somebody called him, so I'm there. And who's standing there? The rock star legend, Mr. Gunther Steiner. So I did the usual, you know, I asked him, may I ask you a question? He said, sure. And so I asked him a few questions. My I said to him, let me ask you a question in a Gunther Steiner style. He was looking at me and I said, if Checo does not win a single race this year, will you call him a wanker? You know, that's one of his favorite lines. He says, no, you cannot call Checo wanker because he is going against Max. So, which is very, very true. Then, sir, I had a chat with Mr. Nicola Todd. As you know, he manages, I think he's still managing Felipe Massa, who was also at the track, by the way. His main client now is Charles Leclerc. He was manager of Jules Bianchi. And I told him, I have a friend who is one of your employees, Olivier. And he asked me, how long have you known him? I said, before you started your driver management program, because, you know, he was working for Todd anyway. And so this has been going around for 20 years. And Jules Bianchi was his first driver. And I asked him, you know, can I come to Geneva to do an interview with him? So he gave me his express verbal consent. So I have all these people I'm meeting this year and trying to set up appointments, hopefully off track so we can play their audio on the podcast, complying with the rules and regulations. I'm hoping to be able to do in the next 2-3 months if they are available. And Danny Sullivan, you know, I've met him several times and he's always been very cooperative and talkative as much the time will allow. So he also answered a few questions and we will put all these interviews in the due course of time on the F1 Weekly page, F1 Weekly webpage. And sir, here was my favorite moment. I had a brief encounter with Dr. Helmut Marko. As you know, these people are always surrounded by people. I asked him if he will give me some time for an interview if I come to one of his hotels he owns in Graz. And he owns these, I think, 2 or 3 very high-end hotels in Graz, his hometown, which is also the hometown to Jochen Rindt. He said yes, so I asked him if I can get his secretary's name and number. He said to me, well, that's Vicky. So I asked, Vicky as in Vicky Lloyd, who does PR for Red Bull. He says, no, this is my own personal assistant who has the same name but works for my business. So I asked, you know, what's her last name? He started smiling and he says, you know, I don't remember her last name and number right now, but if you come by later, I'll give it to you. So the next day I did that. So I got the contact info for him and I will be reaching out to this lady before the end of this month. I told Dr. Mark that there is a 2-week gap between the British Grand Prix and I believe it's the Hungarian Grand Prix. I asked him if this will be a good time because when he's not going to races, he is at his business, which is interesting. You know, the man is in his, I think, early 80s now that he's still taking care of business. So we will see what we can do. Now, of course, if I go that far to talk to him, I will try to spend some time there and see if I can get a slot with Gerhard Berger and Carl Wendlinger. And Carl Wendlinger was a Mercedes junior at Sauber with Michael Schumacher when the fastest man in the team was Heinz Harald Frentzen. So that's the way it was. And Margot Laffite, as you may remember, that she used to race also. And I asked her how the dad is doing. And she said, you know, everybody's getting old, but he's in good shape. He just turned 80, which made the international racing news. So anyway, I, per her request, I sent her an email, see if she can get me an audience. As you know, I'm flying this Thursday to Nice for the Monaco Historics. The week following is the Imola Grand Prix, which I will also go. So I'm hoping in between, if I can have a day or two where Jacques Laffite is available, I would love to talk to him because I was listening to Radio France International live commentary of the 77 Swedish Grand Prix when he won that race in that Jutan Ligier Matra. So that will be quite a very, very emotional and motivational to be able to sit down and talk to him. So we'll see how it goes. And sir, I found out from multiple sources that Formula One, obviously the requirements are very hard now to get credentials, but you know, they will give to whoever they want to, but at least on paper, they will issue a hard pass if you attend 14 races in one season, which may not be possible this year, but I will see if I can make it next season. The only thing negative, apart from the very hot weather, which I cannot complain because I knew going in, the only sad part otherwise was Toto did not invite me for those $100 tacos. But I must say, in the catering area, in the media center, that was very good. And I had my own karma experience. Saturday, I was putting garbage in the bin, and right alongside me doing the same thing was a gentleman, none other than Julian Palmer. Karma. And on Sunday after the race, they had paella, and it came with sauce that had 44 spicy ingredients. Oh my goodness, it was fantastic. And sir, once again, very special thanks to Mr. Paul Velasco of Grand Prix 247 for making this possible for me, and also for FIA/FOM for helping us out for these three races. So that's the way it is. Very enjoyable, love it, and hopefully we can do more in the new future.
Well, that sounds fantastic, Nass. Keep up the good work. You know what we say here at F1 Weekly, the check's in the mail.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So shall we take a Aquafina break and come back?
What a great idea, Nass. We'll be back after these brief messages.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Okay, sir, let me ask you a question. When the race started, Max took the lead. Nobody was surprised. I was very surprised when he was not doing his usual, getting ahead 1 second per lap. What was your take on that situation?
Well, the whole weekend for everybody was truly, truly bizarre because of the Pirellis, the heat on the track. Everybody was affected. I mean, that was the even Steven part of it, but no, and I think it affected Red Bull tremendously throughout the weekend. I mean, Max got pole for the sprint race and won it because he's Max. But you could tell he didn't have the usual 13, 14-second gap in the sprint race. So I knew something was up. And Fernando and the Aston Martins qualified terribly. You could ask Lewis about how slow the car is on those tires. Yeah, it was a very bizarre weekend. And it was the perfect weekend for somebody to get their first Grand Prix win.
This was the first time in last seven races in the United States that Max was not the winner. And, of course, winning the sprint race did not surprise me. And I was pretty convinced that he was going to win on Sunday also. And he had a good start. But I think it was, I don't know how many, it was several laps, maybe 10 laps, I think. And he had only like a 2 or 3 second lead at that time, I believe. So it was definitely not going the usual standard operating procedure for Max was not being seen. So I had an inkling that, oh, you know, maybe something can happen here. And then Max hitting the bollards or cones reminded me of Seb going in the air at Monza on his way to winning in a Toro Rosso. So I thought, you know, hey, the damage was not as easily visible. And whatever it was, I was not aware of it. But I was very surprised that we did not see the bull in Max's driving like we did in Mexico some years ago. Here's looking at you, Bastian. The safety car period may have given the unfair advantage to Lando Norris, but these things happen. Max and Horner are totally aware of it. It's called Yas Marina 2021, very gladly. The Miami heat made sure victory will be a slam dunk for Norris unless he made a mistake, as no rain was in the air. Here's looking at you, Sochi in Sovietskaya. Good to have a new winner in Formula One. Norris won everything in his junior career in his rookie year. Only exception was GP2/F2 championship, where he slipped to number 2 banana behind George Russell. This is McLaren's first Grand Prix victory, a full Grand Prix victory since Honey Badger's sweet and final victory at Monza. Now, I was very impressed by Oscar Piastri in the other McLaren. He was also looking very good. And initially, I thought he had a better chance of winning a race. He fought like a hungry dingo in some of his passing, which I really enjoyed very much. With a wounded Red Bull, you would think Charles Leclerc would pounce on the opportunity, but the best he could do was third, over 9 seconds behind Max, and Max, shockingly, finished over 7 seconds behind our new race winner. Checo was fourth. Before we talk about Checo, were you surprised in the performance of Ferrari this weekend?
Well, once again, those Pirellis, you know, I think Michelin... No, it's going to be back to the same old thing. Well, Imola, yeah, Imola's great. I can't wait. And that's going to be a fantastic weekend. Remembrance, people sad, but... No, I was very happy for Zach. You know, the whole team, when you get that first win as a whole unit, even Fernando went up to the McLaren team and Lando and gave him a kiss and some of those free playing cards that he has. Awesome.
You know, it's amazing what winning will do. I was there all Friday, all Saturday, all Sunday, right? Let me tell you, before the race on Sunday, actually, when you enter, again, we're talking entering from the media center area. When you get to the stadium, the first tent or paddock area was FIA, and the first team was McLaren. Let me just tell you, it was full of McLaren people. That's it, okay? And right opposite was Ferrari. The crowd was at the Ferrari. The second biggest crowd was at Red Bull. And then third, I would say, at Mercedes. And Mick Schumacher was there with Sabine Kim, who for years and years was the manager or assistant to his dad. And so it remained like that. But Sunday after the victory, there was nobody near any of the team. It was like jam-packed. You could not even go and see who's there, full of people. So people love winners, you know, so it shouldn't surprise anyone. Okay, sir, moving on with the result. Checo was fourth. His start almost cost a Spain 2016 for Christian Horner. Max would have strangled Perez had he taken him out of the lead. Here's looking at you, Ocon. Just, you know, let me ask you a question. If something happened, like Checo came very close to hitting or giving a puncture to Max, what do you think Max and Yoss will do to Checo Perez?
Tar and feather.
Yeah, it will not be a good scene in the team garage. Carlos Sainz Jr. was fifth. I was in a McLaren press conference with Andrea Stella after the race when he came to congratulate him. And that was nice to see, because no need to suck on grapes of wrath if you don't win a race. Your other favorite, Hamilton, Tsunoda, Russell, Alonso, and Ocon, completed the top 10. So that was very, very interesting. Sir, anything I may have missed out on the broadcast, or that you enjoyed, that you liked, that you noted, that you want to talk about?
Well, at the beginning of the race, I mean, once everything was sorted after a few laps, the big fight was in the back between the Alpine drivers. I mean, Gasly and Ocon. It was unbelievable. Side by side in some corners, you would not expect that. So there was a lot of good stuff back there, and then you got your Tsunodas and Hamiltons. You know, that's who's Hamilton's fighting these days, is Yuki, because Yuki's climbing the corporate ladder. He's going to be at Aston. He's proving himself. I'm really proud of that young man.
Yeah, you know, this Ocon and Gasly, there is no love lost there. I'm glad that they did not take each other out, so that was good. And we'll see how this thing works out. Looks, based on published reports in the media, looks like both of them are looking to bail out. So that's not very good for Alpine. And I asked Pierre Gasly's dad. I had talked to him for like 10 minutes, something like that. I said, were you at Monza when your son won at Monza, Pierre Gasly? And he says, no. He started shaking his hand. He says, I was home and going like this with COVID, so I could not go there. But obviously a great moment for any parent if your son wins a Formula One race.
And let's not forget the FIA, all that work with all those penalties. I mean, we should have some kind of award for these stewards for meeting their penalty quotas.
Oh, I have to get your take on Alonso pulling the race card.
Oh, it was beautiful. Well, no, it was confirmed. I mean, that little tap that Sainz did... After the race, they gave him the Spanish You deserve it. Usted penalty. And then Hamilton doesn't get the penalty. This is why there's giggling in España.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I was talking to some very, very senior media people. The issue brought up, you know, FIA and all these things that FIA approves Michael Andretti's entry, FOM rejects it. So there is, you know, trouble in paradise. And I was told something, and this is pertaining to the lawsuit that Susie Wolf had filed against FIA and Mohammed bin Sulayem. And he said to me something which is such a hot potato that I will not even toss around on a podcast. But all I will say is all these bickerings about penalties and this and that, this is nothing. This is just a tip of the iceberg. I mean, there are some very serious allegations flying every which way, how this thing leaked out, who leaked out. Because it, you know, if you recall, which was, you know, teams never agree on anything, but when these things came out that there is some conflict of interest because Susie works for FIA, Toto Wolff is head of a Formula One team, all nine teams issued the exact same verbiage thing. That first I thought it's a joke, but then it was obvious that everybody had the same letter that we have not filed a complaint, we're not aware of anything, and, you know, we have no axe to grind here. So that right away made FIA look very, very bad. So this information I got is just, a lawsuit is just tip of the iceberg, let's put it this way. So we'll see what will happen. But, you know, like with any issue or conflict, we would like a peaceful resolution. Sooner the better. And sir, I have to ask you a question. You have three favorite drivers, so your third favorite driver was the only DNF, Mr. Logan Sargeant. What do you think is going to happen? I asked a few people if he will survive. One of them was Otmar Szafnauer, if he will survive the season. And the responses I got was mixed. Some people think, no, he'll be chop-chop. Some people think he will be given till the end of the season, but we will not see him in 2025. What say you?
Well, we know we're not going to see him in 2025. I mean, you know, I'm at a complete loss. But Kimi Antonelli is not going to be placed in that car, which I thought he might be. I thought he might go to Haas. I'm not even sure if Toto is ready to do that. So it's a little confusing. But yeah, I mean, Logan did come through, even though Magnussen helped him a little. And boy, Magnussen was just unreal. But he was helping his teammate do a good job. So it's the team effort that but he's ready for a race ban, I think. So I don't know. It was a pretty crazy penalty ridden race. I hope we can do better in the future.
Yeah, he is just a few points away from a race or two race ban, which would be disappointing. But there is too much of policing, which is something I've said many times, but they're going to do what they want to do. Okay, sir, moving on. Before we move on and go back 30 years, shall we play our interview with the winner of the most recent Grand Prix before he even got to Formula One?
Certainly.
This is our first conversation with Lando Norris. You know, he started racing, I believe, in 2014 Ginetta Cup, which is a, you know, tin-top car. And 2015 was his first single-seater racing competition. And it was, you know, the series he was in was called at that time MSA Formula, British MSA Formula, or Formula MSA. MSA is the Motorsports Authority, which governs motorsports in England, UK. Because of whatever reasons, they could not use the Formula 4. But then, I think a year later, it became British Formula 4. So that's where he started. And in 2015, he was racing against Dan Ticktum. He was racing against Colton Herta, and it was pretty obvious what we have here is a very special talent. And so I'm very happy for him that he has finally won a Grand Prix. Oh, I forgot to mention, Mika Häkkinen was there, and he was, as usual, talking to some people, but his press officer, manager was standing there. I had met him in Laguna Seca when we did the interview. And he's also from Finland. And I remember at the end, at the time of the interview with him at Laguna Seca, he was very businesslike, which is his job, so I cannot complain on that. And he also gave me the, you know, slit throat notice that I've received from quite a few PR managers when it's 10 minutes is 10 minutes. So, but when I met him at Miami, this guy, Sami, was very friendly. And I asked him if Mika, you know, Mika lives in Monte Carlo. So I asked him if Mika will be at the Historic. He said, yeah, of course. So I said, can you get me another 10 minutes? He said, yeah, just send me an email. If he's available, I'll be happy to help you. So that was very nice. So I'm looking forward to talking to some people there. So let's listen to Lando, then we will talk about Imola 1994. This is our first conversation with Lando Norris. You know, he started racing, I believe, in 2014 Ginetta Cup, which is a, you know, tin-top car. And 2015 was his first single-seater racing competition. And it was, you know, the series he was in was called at that time MSA Formula, British MSA Formula, or Formula MSA. MSA is the Motorsports Authority, which governs motorsports in England, UK. Because of whatever reasons, they could not use the Formula 4. But then, I think a year later, it became British Formula 4. So that's where he started. And in 2015, he was racing against Dan Ticktum. He was racing against Colton Herta. And it was pretty obvious what we have here is a very special talent. And so I'm very happy for him that he has finally won a Grand Prix. Oh, I forgot to mention, Mika Häkkinen was there, and he was, as usual, talking to some people, but his press officer, manager was standing there. I had met him in Laguna Seca when we did the interview, and he's also from Finland. And I remember at the end, at the time of the interview with him at Laguna Seca, he was very businesslike, which is his job, so I cannot complain on that. And he also gave me the, you know, slit throat notice that I've received from quite a few PR managers when it's 10 minutes is 10 minutes. So, but when I met him at Miami, this guy, Sami, was very friendly. And I asked him if Mika lives in Monte Carlo. So I asked him if Mika will be at the Historic. He said, yeah, of course. So I said, can you get me another 10 minutes? He said, yeah, just send me an email. If he's available, I'll be happy to help you. So that was very nice. So I'm looking forward to talking to some people there. So let's listen to Lando, then we will talk about Imola 1994.
Okay, folks, I'm here with the young rising talent of British motor racing scene, Mr. Lando Norris. Lando, good to see you. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks.
This is your first year of motor racing, right?
Second year in cars. Last year I did the Ginetta Junior Championship.
Tell us about that car. How big is that car and what age can you race in that series?
So you can race from 14.
Oh, wow.
That's why I did it last year, because it was the only sort of car championship I could really do. And it's a good car to learn in. It's on a road tyre, so it moves around a lot. So you're never really under the limit. But you could be, but if you're fast, you have to be over the limit a lot of the time. So yeah, it's a good car to learn in.
So in the last 3 years, you've gone from karting to tin tops to single-seater racing. Which has been the most fun?
They're all quite equal, to be honest. Okay. Yeah, I couldn't really pick one out.
Now, England is the center of motor racing, where cars are turning right and left. Tell me how you develop interest in motorsport. Was there any interest in the family?
Not massively. My dad watched a few Grand Prix and stuff with his dad quite a few years ago. But no, it's just one day my dad took me to the local kart track. Luckily there was a race going on, the British Championships. And I said, oh, like a go, anything like that. For my 7th birthday, I got a go-kart. Yeah, and it all kind of started from there.
Were you quick? Like, you know, some kids are quick from day one. Were you one of those kids?
I don't think I was anything special. I'm not sure really how everyone starts up when they first get in the kart and everything, but I enjoyed it a lot. I wanted to keep doing more and more and more. And I think that's when I started to improve a lot as I've become where I am today.
Okay, and how long were you in karting?
7 years. So I started racing when I was 8 and stopped at the end of last year. So last year I did the Ginetta and I also did the karting, so it was a mix of both.
In your life as a karting racer, what were some of your big achievements that you're very proud of?
Firstly was the Junior European Champion, which is really good. In 2014 I also finished, 2013, sorry, I finished fourth in the World Championship as well. And then last year I finished, I think, fourth in the European Championship and was the youngest ever senior world champion.
That's very impressive. Yeah. Now, in karting, strictly karting days, who are some other drivers who you will not be surprised if you're knocking on the door of Formula One and they're doing the same thing? What would those names be?
I don't know, really.
Nobody was as good as you are?
Yeah, there are a lot of people.
Like, some karter you respect as hard racers? Hard and fair racers.
I think Dan Ticktum. I don't know when he started, but we've been racing in a similar category since I think I was 9 or 10, and he's been always really fast. It's been aggressive, fair, but yeah, I think we've had a lot of good racing together.
And in your tin top career, 1 year of Ginetta, how did you do in that?
I finished third in the end. It's not too bad, considering it's my first year in cars. I think 4 wins, so yeah, I think it's a good first season. But mainly a good kind of way to start racing career.
Now, this is round two today, this weekend at Donington, and you had 3 races at Brands. You won 2 of them, I am told, or I read on the website. And then one of the wins was taken away from you, and I guess your team is appealing. Question is, when you found out the win has been taken, did you cry? We want the truth now.
I didn't cry, but I was really unhappy. Almost crying, on the edge. But
that's only human.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
So what happened there? What's your version of the story?
Well, basically, I got told there was a safety car out. Someone overtook me at that point because I slowed up. And then he let me get past later on under the safety car. And the clerk of the course said, because the other driver that overtook me wasn't there at the time, he said that I overtook under the safety car and under yellow flags. So that was the reason for getting excluded, but yeah.
Now, you and Ticktum are doing very well in this series, which is so young. I'm sure you want to win the championship. Apart from him, are any of the drivers you think will become big challengers for you guys?
I think my teammates. I don't think I've ever been much faster than them. They've always been pressuring me a lot, and obviously helped out a lot as well. So I think both my teammates are really good.
Names, please.
Colton Herter and Petru Florescu. So yeah, we'll start off with them. There's a lot of others. So there's Ricky Collard, Sandy Mitchell, Enam Ahmed. I don't know, it's going to be close. There's going to be a lot of close racing coming this year.
Okay, as a proud British racer, the question is, Jenson Button or Lewis Hamilton?
Racing of Lewis Hamilton, but personality of Jenson Button.
What about girlfriend? I think Lewis has an edge, or at least with the ex.
Yeah.
Okay, how about we have listeners all over the world, including quite a few here in England, and 2 of them are with me. How about a message to our listeners, and please tell them about your website also.
To, would you say, lessons?
No, a message for, tell them, hey dude, go to my website.
I don't know, I'd like to say a big thank you first to everyone that's supported me so far. And yeah, if you haven't already, go check out my website, landonnorris.com. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And yeah, hopefully see you all soon.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ben, I wish you all the best. I know you're already...
Congratulations, Lando. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. Now we go to one of the darkest days in the history of Formula One, Imola 1994. You know, back in the days during the Belgian Grand Prix, 2 British drivers were killed. Chris Bristow and Ellen Stacey during the Belgian Grand Prix. And one of them was killed when a bird hit his face and he lost control. And that, I mean, racing was very dangerous in those days, but to have two fatalities in a weekend, that is just terrible. So on Saturday, 1994, we saw the crash of Austrian driver Roland Ratzenberger. He had worked his way to the top by winning the Formula Ford Festival at Brands Hatch and racing in Japan. I got the news of his death on Sunday as the Formula One cars were on warm-up lap. Obviously, it was very sad news. My thought was, what has happened, but at least we will not have another fatality in Formula One for another 10 years. And that was honestly my thought at that time. Little did I know what was going to happen 10 minutes later. Senna was the first world champion to be killed in a Formula One race, which really surprised me with all the dangers these drivers have gone through, 50s, 60s, 70s. Two things stand out from that tragic weekend. First, Max Mosley went to Ratzenberger's funeral as all the big names were going to Senna's funeral. Bernie Ecclestone was not allowed to attend by Senna's family. You know that picture of Alain Prost carrying his coffin? That just million frisson for me. It's just a very haunting picture. The other thing that really stands out was, this is incredible, when the death of Senna was broadcast on Japanese network NHK, the newscaster broke down. And you know, ironically, in Miami, I was sitting next to a Japanese journalist who had previously lived in San Diego. I asked him about that. He said that's true, even though, you know, he was very young, but he has seen this. And, you know, I'm going to tell you something. I recently found out about this, and I tried to watch it, and for whatever reason, I could not. But one day I will, you know, as time heals everything, I guess. So anything you want to say about Imola 1994, sir? I have to ask you, because this was long before we met, were you in San Jose, and when did you got this news about Senna?
Yes, I was in San Jose. I was getting ready to fly to France when I heard the tragic news, and it's awful. It was just terrible. I cried, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, I was in a hotel room with a friend in Phoenix, Arizona, and man, we had gone there on a vacation, and it just ruined the whole thing. Sun came up next day, we move on. Okay, sir, now we talk about the Battle of the Bucks. As we discussed earlier, U.S. Congress, they have sent a letter to Liberty Media demanding to know why Formula One has blocked Andretti GM's entry and raised questions over its antitrust legality. And that's the real beautiful word. And what was interesting is they gave them a very short time to respond. They're asking a few questions. And one of my favorite, this is very nice, question being asked, under what authority does FOM proceed to reject admission of Andretti Global? What is the rationale for FOM's rejection? And of course, they refer to the Sherman Act, which does not allow, you know, monopoly and this kind of behavior. But we will see. I'm sure there is a lot more to this campaign and what's going to happen. But I will tell you this, since Liberty Media is based here in the U.S., they have no choice but to comply with U.S. regulation. And if this thing goes to Congress and becomes a hot political potato, as anything and everything does, but here we have a very good case where it's pretty obvious the only reason they're not allowing is greed. If the Congress comes down on Liberty pretty hard, they better shape up, I think. That's just my call. What say you?
Well, the biggest problem with that is to be a congressman, you have to be greedy. So they might respect that American system pretty well. I don't know. They might hide it. It's going to be bizarre, but I think Liberty just doesn't want to deal with this and will eventually
cave in.
Of course, they're going to cave in because they don't want the negative optics.
Okay, sir. Next item on the agenda. So much is going on, such a big news, we are talking so late. Take this job and shove it. With Adrian Newey leaving the building at the start of the 2025 season and Honda packing up at the end of the 2025 season, dishes are done for Red Bull. I think they should name their 2026 Challenger as RB13. Misery loves company. One man who loves victory, not misery, is Max Verstappen. I will be very, very surprised with Adrian and Honda gone that Max is still driving for Red Bull in 2026. What do you think?
No, I think he's going to go over to Andretti.
You think so?
That's the big scoop. I have no idea. You know, he said he's going to stay till 2028. And Max is a man of his word, so we'll see what happens. I've got a funny feeling that Ford is going to deliver. Remember Le Mans?
Yeah, and they won a championship at Schumacher also.
You betcha. And that was the exciting part. Benetton, as a team, went from the Ford Package, very reliable, very dependable, to the Renault V10 and won another championship. Could you imagine Max winning a championship with the Ford? He'll get a free Ford LTD for life.
Yeah, but you know, when four people enter the Red Bull building, some of them might say, you know, well, this looks familiar. That last adventure was not very cool. But, you know, that's the way these things go. Oh, sir, I have to ask you, did Mr. President Donald Trump get nice coverage on TV during the broadcast?
No, but I actually, he did not. I didn't see him waving during the national anthem. Now, they said he did on the internet, but I was there watching it, and I did not see it. Luckily, Sky Sports did a good job, or Sky TV. No, I heard some people apologizing because he was seen talking to Lando Norris and your buddy Zach, and they were hanging out and feeling really good about the whole thing.
Well, Zach Brown said that the team is not political, but they respect the office of the President of the United States. But, you know, there was a cease and desist on Donald. What happened before the race? A cease and desist letter was sent to his supporter, Stephen Witkoff. He was trying to hold a fundraiser in the F1 paddock priced at $250,000 per person. Now, I can understand if an elected official is invited, that's one thing, regardless of what party they belong to. As I've said a few times, politics and ideology should not be allowed to contaminate the beautiful world of motor racing and music, because these two things bring people together, and anytime you inject politics or ideology into the situation, it creates nothing but friction and division, and I think we have enough of that this day and age anyway. But coming in as a person, you know, I mean, anybody can come, so that should not be an issue. I do have an important question for you. Would you like to see Nancy Pelosi wave the checkered flag at the Polish Grand Prix and then be seen enjoying some kielbasa with Kubica?
Why not? She's done a lot of good things for the San Francisco Bay Area, for California. I have nothing against Nancy.
Okay, now our man Nico Hülkenberg has set a new track record, 209 Grand Prix without a win, going one ahead of Andrea De Cesaris. And last week, your second favorite driver, Lewis Hamilton, did a demo run in his Mercedes W12, I believe it was, on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, New York City. And this was done as a promotion for the sponsor, WhatsApp. Did you go to see any of that?
No way.
Okay. Oh, I mean on TV. Did you catch any of this on TV or YouTube?
No. I mean, it's just running up and down a New York Avenue. I mean, was Fernando there to block him or anything? Or, I don't know.
Yeah, that would have been something very nice. Okay, next we have Gunter Goes Jacoby and Myers. Lawyers are busy in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. Gunter Steiner has filed a lawsuit against his former employer, and claiming show me the money. According to his complaint, he is owed money and commission on deals he brought to the team. Plus, the team is still selling merchandise with his image, and they do not have his express written concern. So we will see how it goes. Okay, sir, that should do it, sir. I have a very busy month of May. I'm flying out Thursday for the Monaco Historics, courtesy of media credentials, through the good offices of the corporate headquarters of F1 Weekly in San Jose, California, and their dynamic CEO, Clark Rogers. And then after that, I am invited to visit Orica at the Paul Ricoh facility, which I've never been to Paul Ricoh, so I'll be there on Tuesday of next week, then the Imola Grand Prix. Very interesting, sir. I think it's May 25, the Saturday before the Indy 500. I am very thankful for Miss Jennifer Refson, sister of Peter Refson. She has invited me to her location, and I will be going and doing a nice extended. She had requested I sent her questions, which is fair. Some people do request that. So I sent all those questions about a week ago, and I got a text message from her that these are fine, and let's meet at this time. So hopefully we'll have a very nice conversation with a sister of a gentleman who won two Formula One Grand Prix races and was on pole at Indy, and Can-Am champion Peter Revson. So very heavy involvement this year, moving around. And then once I come back, I'll recharge my batteries and see if I can. This is the plan, to do 4 to 6 weeks of Airbnb somewhere in Europe, do a lot of interviews. And we'll see how far we can go on these agendas. All right, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. Go take a nap. And there you have it, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye. Thank you.